Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts, sports journalist David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves, chillin', talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 8, Episode 126. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com and sitting in once again for my co-host David Todd on this Friday, the last Friday before the start of the Steelers 2018 training camp, is Alex Cazora. Alex, happy Friday, and this time next week I suppose you'll be on the road to La Trobe.
Yeah, man, I can't wait. It is, and I said it before, and I'll say it again because it is so important to talk about. Training camp is the absolute best time of the year for me. St. Vincent College is beautiful. If you're in Western PA, you've never been to a training camp, you've never been to St. Vincent College, you have to get out there. You won't regret it, I promise. Just the campus itself is absolutely gorgeous. And then, of course, Steelers football right next to you. Nothing better than that.
Definitely look forward to that once again. This is, your fourth year or fifth year?
Fourth or fifth, I forget. I'm getting old. I'm losing track.
Yeah, you and Matthew have been here quite a while. And here's a little something for you and the listeners. 51 days, 5 hours, and 28 minutes until the Steelers kick off their regular season against the Cleveland Browns. So, and obviously, let's see, you know, from yesterday, it was what, 3 weeks from yesterday will be the first preseason game. So we're almost there, folks. And got a few different things I think we can talk about today. But first, you know, obviously, with the Le'Veon Bell news and all last week, David and I talked, dedicated damn near a whole podcast to it on Tuesday. You know, I think there's a little bit left on the horse we can beat.
There's a phrase for you. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, look, you already know where I stand on this. You know where David stands on this. You know, you obviously aren't shocked that a deal didn't get done, but you know, now that we think that we know more of the numbers, which by the way, we, you know, there was it $70 or $75 million total value. We don't really know. There is a report out there since David and I last talked about from Ian Rappaport about $10 million signing bonus only being the was offered, and that was the only fully guaranteed part of the deal. Now, would that be surprising that number's that low? I guess not, but we'll get into talking a little bit more about virtual guarantees and real guarantees here in a minute. But, you know, as far as a Steelers offering a deal goes and how they structure it, and if there's any question about how the Steelers are on the you know, one of very few teams that structures in, you know, higher percentages of guaranteed money, that, you know, that should be out the window now, because Adisa Bakari told, you know, us, or what I already knew and what several of you listening to this show should have already knew, is that the Steelers just don't like to come off of a high percentage of guaranteed money in really just the first year in general. So with all that mouthful said, what were your initial thoughts? You know, not necessarily after it didn't get done, because you kind of expected it not to get done, but after seeing some of the numbers and hearing that absolutely fantastic interview, I thought, by Adisa Bakari on Sirius NFL XM Radio.
Yeah, it was great. I learned a lot. It was great to get that perspective from Bell's Asian side in a rational and articulate and informative, you know, manner, being complimentary of the Steelers for working through the process, but also explaining, you know, as you mentioned, that the big reason why this deal did not get done because of the guaranteed money or lack thereof and the way the Steelers structure their deals. You know, he said there are only two teams that really only offer guaranteed in the first year, Pittsburgh. And do you know what the other is, Dave? He didn't mention it.
It's either Cincinnati or Green Bay.
Okay. that tracks. That makes sense. So, that, you know, I think if this would have been a different team even with the same amount of money, but had it been structured different, or, you know, different team philosophy, then this deal could have gotten done. And you can blame Pittsburgh for that. You can blame Bell for that. I'm not really interested in this moment in this discussion to assign blame here. But, you know, I'm just bummed that it didn't get done. I wanted Bell to come back, and the fact that he's not is a bummer.
You know, it doesn't sound like the two sides were close. You know,
Rappaport said they were closer last year than this year, which is curious.
Yeah, I mean, and I don't, like I told David the other day, I just can't envision a lot of negotiating going on there in the last couple of weeks or whatever, because the Steelers have a way that they like to structure deals, and really kind of that's that. But let's assume. And really, you know, what's amazing is, you know, I talked pretty much all the offseason about $18 to $20 million in the first year of that deal. And it sounds like that's about what the number was. Now, let's assume that he was only fully guaranteed the signing bonus. He was virtually guaranteed the, you know, let's say $20 million in year one. He was virtually guaranteed whatever the March roster bonus would be. So let's go ahead and call that $6 million, or let's call it $5 million for a nice round number of $25 million by March of 2018 or 2019. And he was virtually guaranteed the $33 million through the 2019 seasons. Now, do I think, and did I think that if offered a deal such as that, that he would have taken it and that he would have seen at least that much of that money through the first 2 years? Absolutely. That's why I was kind of hedging, or that's why I was hedging toward saying I think a deal ultimately gets done, because this is kind of the deadline of two deadlines. And mm-hmm. I figured the Steelers would be fair with him and offer. I didn't think they would go, you know, above what they normally do with non-quarterback guarantees. But all in all, I think this is a fair deal for both sides, considering the parties involved. Now, let's assume the Steelers would have offered 33 full the first 2 years fully guaranteed. Do you think Bell takes that deal then?
30 in the first 2 years?
$33 million. Exactly the same structure as we're hearing, except fully guaranteed $33 million.
I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, it's hard for me to have any good feeling one way or the other. I'd like to think so.
What does your gut tell you he would have done if he didn't accept $10 million? But if the 33, if the first 2 years of, you know, and assuming that first 2 years totaled out at $33 million, do you think that still wouldn't have been enough?
I think that he probably would have wanted some more security beyond the first 2 years, because I imagine he believes he's going to play at a high level and not have any too big worries about getting through the first 2 years of the deal. But can you get a signing bonus big enough to give that security throughout the length of the deal? So if I had my gut, I'll say no, but my gut's too stupid about the cap stuff to really give you a great answer.
How, assuming he would have taken the deal offered him, put a percentage on him seeing that $33 million in the first 2 years.
I mean, almost 100%, if I'm understanding the question correctly. I think he makes it through the first 2 years of the deal without issue.
Right. I mean, but it's still not fully guaranteed, you know.
Right.
So to hear Adisa Bakari, and look, I know people are going to have taken sides on this. Bell's greedy. The Steelers should have done more. You can't believe anything that comes out of an agent's mouth. Knowing what I know about how the Steelers do business with contracts and all, Alex, and knowing how the cap works as much as I do or have learned over the years, everything Adisa Bakari said during that Sirius satellite radio, which we've written up probably 80% of it, I believed.
The only thing I didn't like that he said was that he has said the Steelers were paying the position, not the player. And I thought that was, at best, a half-truth.
Now, he did talk about the the position board about how much what do you call that,
allocation of money, how much teams dedicate to a position, and running back is generally low.
Right. Now, do I believe, you know, do the Steelers, and he cited that most teams follow a position allocation board, and I believe that. Mm-hmm. Now, do the Steelers follow it? Yeah, I don't know.
You
know,
I believe that they probably do.
They probably do. But do they follow it as far? Do they follow that as far as guaranteed money goes? I mean, is it a lower percentage? I mean, because look, if $10 million of $70 million was all that was guaranteed, that's a low percentage right mm-hmm. there. And that's even lower than what they normally kind of guarantee, if you will. Now, I still, you know, $20 million versus $14.544 million. I guess the bell isn't a big deal, you know. You know, he figures he can make that up, and you know the presumed $33 million over the next 2 years. I'm guessing, you know, he thinks he can make that up as well too. Not worried about him dogging it at all. You know, Adisa Pakari. Here's one other thing that we can talk about related to this. Any other thoughts on the contract other than it didn't get done and nobody expects him back in. You know, look, I expect the Steelers to make an attempt to re-sign him after the season, but there's no way he doesn't at least test the free agent market now. And really, if you get him back in Pittsburgh now on a deal, you know, after the season, something's probably gone wrong with him in the wrong direction. Because if he stays healthy and he puts together a season, similar to what he did last year, and of course stays out of trouble, somebody's going to pay him a lot more guaranteed than what the Steelers are going to be willing to. So, do you have any other thoughts on that aspect of the deal and the deal not getting done?
No, absolutely. I agree that I think the negotiation will be not a negotiation, but the Steelers will just say the offer we gave you a week ago is still on the table, and if you want to take it, that's fine. But he's not going to do it. He's going to test. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind about that. I don't have much other thoughts. You know, I did a quick video kind of breaking down everything right after it happened. It's just fun, Dave, to see the information dance kind of come out afterwards. You know, you had the 5 year, $70 million from Rappaport. I'm assuming that came from the team, somewhere inside the team, Omar Khan maybe, to make kind of Bell look bad. And so then you have Rappaport coming out about the only $10 million signing bonus. That's, I'm assuming, from Bell's camp, trying to kind of fight back on that narrative. So it's just kind of fun to watch, and fun in a weird sense, to see them kind of leak info to try to make the other side look bad.
Yeah, and look, when these initial numbers come out on the Twitter machine, mm-hmm. But you have to be wary, especially when it comes to the guaranteed. And that's what I, you know, said immediately. And I think a couple people said, well, so-and-so said $33 million guaranteed. The guaranteed's not guaranteed, if that makes sense. Because, yes, it was, in essence, $33 million guaranteed from when you talk about injury and skill guarantees, probably. And Adisa Pakari, I think, said as much in his interview the other day on Sirius. But was $33 million fully guaranteed? And the answer is no. And I knew that immediately as quick as those numbers came out. You have to watch when these numbers come out. And while that first number of guarantees is usually generally probably the total value of the first 2 years of the deal. Now, whether or not that amount turns out to be the fully guaranteed amount versus fully guaranteed plus injury skill guarantee, that's another thing. But see, all anybody remembers is that first number that's put out there. You know,
both teams manipulate the word guarantee. The Steelers kind of manipulate not including the injury guarantee part. Bell side's doing the fully guaranteed and ignoring first year base salary, which is essentially guaranteed.
So, you know, keep that in mind. Let me tell you, if $10 million was the signing bonus, and remember me saying I would have tried to structure this thing with about a $10 to $12 million signing bonus and then give him the other, you know, $8, $9, $10 million in first year base salary, because that way you can not only give him that $20 million in year one, you can limit your dead money possibility on the back end. At the same time, you can keep his 2018 cap number roughly right around where it is now. And so if you would have, let's say that is $10 million signing bonus. It's hard to imagine them not giving him another $10 million in 2018 as far as either all in base salary or half base salary, half roster bonus due 2 weeks after he signs it, something like that. So let's assume $20 million was the take in 2018. You're looking at a $12 million cap number with Bell, which is, you know, $2.5 million less than what his franchise tag cap number would have been. And then on top of it, you could have easily cut him after the 2018 season and only had, you know, made him a March cap casualty at that, assuming you cut him after the start of the new league year and before his roster bonus was due. Then you can make him a post-June 1st cap casualty, have $2 million in dead money in 2019, and only in $6 million in dead money in 2020, and you've washed your hands of him. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's kind of the way. If the contract is as Ian Rappaport, you know, wants us to believe it was, no wonder Adisa Bakari was a little bit kind of nervous. Hey, they can, you know, this might be just a 1 year, $20 million deal, you know? Mm-hmm. Now, do I think it would have come to that? No. I think at worst, you look at this thing at a 2 year, $33 million deal. So, you know, $16.5 million, assuming that's the number, that's not bad for Bell. And I'm not sure, once again, I'm not sure I would have turned that down.
No, I agree. And, you know, if I'm Bell, I would have taken the deal, but I don't begrudge him for turning it down. I'm sure you don't either. It's his decision, his prerogative. And I'm fully confident that if he can have a similar year to the last two that he's had in Pittsburgh, he will get exactly what he wants, maybe even a little bit more on the open market, because you're going to have teams with $50 million in cap space to burn. And when teams have that kind of money, they make some bad decisions. And this is a good player. So I don't think it's going to be an Albert Haynesworth kind of situation. So I'm fully confident he can get, you know, $15, $16 million average yearly value with a lot better guaranteed money on the open market.
Okay, have faith, listeners. You can put your abacus. Is it
abacus? Abacus. Abacus.
Is it abacus? Abacus?
Yeah. It's not abacus.
I don't know. Well, I'm from down south, and we say things a little bit different. I think it is. I wonder how many listeners say abacus and how many say abacus, and what's the plural of that?
If this gets more than one vote for abacus, I'm gonna quit the site. I've never heard anyone.
Don't say that, because I think we have some listeners in the south that might back me up here. Now, what's the plural of it?
I don't know what rabbit hole we're going down, Dave. You used this in school. I had a calculator. All right?
I didn't use much in school. I think that's true. I think that's pretty obvious, right?
You went to school? I didn't know that.
I walked uphill in the snow both ways in Florida.
Right.
I think it's abacus. I don't know. But chime in on that, listeners. How about that for a Friday? Okay, you can put that away. I'll put my shoes back on. We won't talk digits anymore. Let's talk about what else Adisa Bakari said about his client, and that is that, surprise, surprise, Le'Veon's probably not going to show up for training camp or the preseason, but he will be there week one. And if any of you believed that nonsense, and look, I love Adam Schefter. Nobody, you know, is better probably about breaking news than he is. But his speculation about that nonsense about him potentially sitting out in that radio interview last week. That was just it, nonsense. And I kind of called that out right away. I will be shocked if Le'Veon Bell is not in uniform for week one. And, you know, I have no concerns about Bell dogging it or anything this season. Look, and he has every incentive in the world not to at this point. I mean, he's on another one-year deal, and he has to play well again to get another deal. So, you know, none of that's surprising, right?
Right. Full agreement there. He's not going to dog it. He's going to show up week one. He's not going to pretend like he's hurt or that he's worn down, because that's going to just feed into the argument that backs get hurt and get worn down. So that just would be just totally counterproductive to do. He'll be there week one. Now it's a question of just how do you avoid the obstacles you faced last year with the rust and not being in true football shape, even though he's going to be a highly conditioned guy. And Tom's talked about that. You know, it's not something you can avoid entirely, but are there steps that Bell can do? Are there steps the team can take to try to avoid that and be in a better place? I'd like to think so. I don't have any good solutions, but hopefully they can kind of attack it a little bit better, knowing what they know from a year ago today.
Do you maybe kind of ease them in more this year in that first week? And maybe the Browns game is his second preseason game kind of action, 8-9 carries. You would think that wouldn't be what. Well, I mean, he hit the ground running last year, right? I mean,
well, that first week he got eased in a little bit. He played a relatively to him low percentage amount of snaps.
What did he?
I'm looking up
right now as well too. I'm trying to remember what percentage of snaps he played in that.
I'm almost positive it'd be the lowest percentage of snaps in a full game for him that he got.
72%.
Yeah, which is low for Bell.
Yeah, that's very low. That's 43 snaps for him. Now, Connor played 8. Nick's 10.
Watson.
Huh?
Did Terrell Watson get any work that game?
No, he did not. Didn't they use more?
Empty.
Empty in that?
Yeah.
In that game, isn't that how they kind of offset it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think you're right. So
because they played 60 offensive snaps in total in that game. He played Bell played 43, so that's 17 minus. So it's only 9, you know, 9 extra stats. And I think I remember Matthew Marksy writing about that now a little bit more. Now, now that I think about that, about kind of a little bit more empty, and will we see that as much? You know, maybe you don't have to go that route. Maybe you play maybe Bell gets, say, 60-65% in the opener, and if Connor has shown you anything, you know, more, you know, can be a more all-around guy, maybe he gets a little bit more work this time around. So, I mean, we could see, obviously, a repeat of how they brought him along in that opener, right?
Yeah, I think it'll be similar. He's not going to be able to play 95% of the time in his first game. I just think that'd be reckless for both sides. Maybe they do some pony stuff where Bell gets to play in the slot more often because it's a little less taxing, and they can have Connor as a more trustworthy guy in the backfield. So maybe they can try to make up the snap count that way. But, I mean, you have to think that first week he's going to be playing around like he did last year, 75% of the time, just because it's hard to go from 0 to 100, you know, immediately like that.
Do you believe in the football shape, quote-unquote, you know, quote-unquote football shape, though, right?
I mean, yes, 100%.
In other words, you can't simulate that outside of – you don't believe that you can simulate that by not being in camp in a preseason.
Right. Bell will show up in shape and in better shape than most players showing up, but it's not going to be week one NFL-ready 100% like normal. Just not going to happen.
Okay, now here's the other kind of wrapping up on Bell here, my buddy, Mike Florio. Look, I read Pro Football Talk. I think Mike Florio is another one that's good at his job. Do I think sometimes he goes over the top a little bit? Yes, I do. I think him being a lawyer and all helps, obviously, in understanding aspects of the CBA that are very, very hard to understand. Do I believe he's a fan of the Pittsburgh Steelers? Absolutely, I do. I envision him rooting for them on game days. Do I think he takes great enjoyment out of needling the Steelers in between games? Absolutely, I think he does. And I think he knows he's dealing with a large fan base willing to click on quite a bit related to the Steelers, good or bad or not well thought out. But one thing he wrote earlier this week, I don't think he thought out very well, and that's him even suggesting that the Steelers would pull the tag on Bell prior to him signing it.
Yep, that'd be the absolute dumbest thing the Steelers could do, and there's just no point for it. I mean, what was his rationale? That the team was mad and they would hurt themselves because of it?
Yeah, upset. I guess, you know, you could probably add in there not wanting a needed drama. And look, it didn't get – the deal didn't get done. I think probably probably if you ask Kevin Colbert if he's ultimately surprised that the deal didn't get done, knowing how he knows how negotiations went a year ago, he'll probably tell you no. Adisa Picari, probably knowing what Le'Veon Bell wants – probably wasn't surprised the deal didn't get done. Because you're upset a deal didn't get done and a guy didn't want to commit, you know, his future past this year, you don't just pull the tag of the top running back, all around running back in the league. And oh, by the way, and this is one thing that I wrote about in that post. Why would you even think, you know? Look, if he gets in trouble or, you know, what have you, you know, a lot of things can happen unforeseen that make you want to wash your hands of him in a New York minute. Other than those unforeseen circumstances, why are you going to cut him? Because if you do, I mean, if you pull that tag, not cut him, pull the tag, you're giving up. At this point now, you're giving up compensatory draft pick value. And I say value instead of getting a pick because until we know what happens in free agency next year of who's brought in, who's signed away, that's all you can't say, well, they're going to get a third-round pick for this. You get value, and then we see what offsets it and all like that. So it's important to use the term compensatory draft pick value instead of just saying a pick. So, you know, it's hard to imagine right now as we sit here today, Bell not bringing a third-round compensatory pick value, and at worst, a fourth-round pick value. So are you telling me that because you're upset, as Mike Florio put it, that he didn't sign a deal with you, that you're going to let the best all-around running back in the league just walk away and not get anything in return for it either? And the answer is that's silly to even suggest that. And Mike should be ashamed of himself too. And once again, I, you know, they send us traffic, Alex, you know that.
Mm-hmm.
And you gotta, you know, it takes a lot for me to write, you know, a piece pointing out an error on a guy such as him, because normally he's on his P's and Q's for the most part, but he made a mistake there and I had to call him out on it.
Laughable was what that notion was. Talk about cutting off your nose to spite your face. You know, you're going to release Bell. You have no way to replace him. There's no free agency. There's no draft. There's no nothing. You can't use that money saved on anything. You know, money's been allocated everywhere. You have your guys. It'd be useless. So, yeah, not even remote possibility of happening. But I will say this. Florio, not the worst hot take I've heard on the Bell situation. Max Starks, who I wrote about yesterday, who had some very valuable, and I say that sincerely, but some very valuable insight on Ben Roethlisberger. Starks was on the Pat McAfee show, and he floated the idea that Bell would purposely sit out the playoffs to not get hurt. and because he's not technically under contract, and he's already been paid his weekly salary that he would skip out on his teammates. Not that he was saying this as a source, but he was floating it as an idea, which of course is just never going to happen.
Yeah, that's a bit out there.
More than a bit. I mean, which is more out there, Florio's comment or Stark signing the bell with Zoom?
Jeez.
Yes, I think might be the answer to that.
I didn't hear that aspect of it.
And I purposely did not write about it because that could have been an easy clickbait thing, but it's just so out there. I'm not going to give it.
That's crazy. Yeah. wow. Look, and here's the other thing. Another half of the fan base is saying, that's it. Trading for 14 first round draft picks to the Cleveland Browns. That'll teach him. A, he hasn't signed his tag yet. You have to sign him before you can trade him. B, you have to find a partner willing to trade and give up the draft capital for him. And B, or C, I don't know where I am at in the alphabet there, but there has to be kind of a plan, a deal in place, a long-term deal in place with the team willing to trade for him, because he's not going to sign that tag just to go back to be in the same situation he's in right now, and that's playing for $14.544 million.
Mm-hmm. And you have to find someone who has the cap space to absorb a $15 million cap hit.
And that's the easiest of everything we're throwing out there, because that exists.
Yeah. But there's only – it's a limited amount of teams.
Right. There's a limited amount of teams. And he's not going to go to – probably want to go play for one that he knows doesn't have a chance to win the Super Bowl this year either. So none of that's going to happen. I mean, the fact that we just spent 10 more minutes talking about scenarios that aren't going to happen, but, it's our job. We try our best to kind of educate folks, but it doesn't – I'll get three more tweets here probably in the next 24 hours saying trade Bell's ass to this, that, and the other, so
yeah.
we'll see. Okay. All right. We're done with Bell. Let's move on. Max Starks did have something else to say about Ben Roethlisberger though. Right. And you wrote that up.
Yeah. Let me pull up the exact quote here. And I'm not 100% sure if Starks was getting this information directly from Ben, that he talked to him, or if this was just kind of his interpretation of how Ben was reacting to it based on what he knows about him playing with him. But basically, he's on the Pat McAfee show talking about the Mason Rudolph selection and kind of how that fired Roethlisberger up. And we kind of know what happened right after that. And, the whole – I think a lot of it got overblown. But anyway, Stark says, quote, with Ben, he's motivated because they drafted a third-round quarterback in the draft, and that fired him up a little bit. It's not like there haven't been quarterbacks drafted in years past. It hasn't been serious. You've had Landry Jones, Joshua Dobbs, but none to this degree where it's like the future is really real for me. Mason Rudolph represents that. He goes on to say, Ben's a highly competitive dude, so he has to kind of psych himself out a little bit, but also realize I dictate this. I'm still the face of this franchise at the quarterback position. I'll let you know when I'm done. So basically just saying, and I don't think it's much of a shock to you or I or anyone listening that, Ben is competitive, and when he sees Rudolph get selected, he takes it a little bit personally and kind of reacts in that manner.
Yeah, Ben's that cat that whenever another cat walks into his hair stands up on the back. Look, I have no problem with guys being competitive. I know he's not thrilled about it. Probably not thrilled about it the way Brett Favre wasn't thrilled about Aaron Rodgers. He's going to work with him and everything along those lines. But look, this is, and I've said this since Rudolph was drafted, Ben should be able to play as long as Ben can be the franchise quarterback of this team. And if that means two more years, if that means it's eight more years, have at it. Because, franchise quarterbacks, you got to have one if you're going to win in the NFL. And, we might not ever know whether or not Mason Rudolph is a or at least not with the Steelers at some point. But just in case, 2 years from now, who knows? At least you have maybe a plan in place should it not work out.
I agree wholeheartedly, and I thought it was just interesting perspective from Starks, not only with those comments I just said, but him talking about kind of how players view the draft and how it's a total 180 from how fans, you or I, view the draft. You know, we're excited about the new talent coming in to see how those guys can help the team. But if you're on the roster, especially if you're on the roster bubble, you hate the draft because those are guys coming in to take your job. And so if you're a star, you worry about, you know, they just drafted a second-round pick at my position. What does that mean that they think about me? Or if you're a bubble guy, you're thinking, man, my path to the roster just got a whole lot tougher. So it was a good perspective to bring because we don't think about it in those terms. But, you know, if you're a player in any situation, you always view that as competition. And the draft is kind of almost the worst time of the year for you, as for us, where it's kind of almost one of the best times of the year.
You know, one other thing about the whole Bell thing, and I want to ask David Todd this, get your thoughts on it as well, too. Running back in the 2019 draft. First, will they draft one in the first two rounds, first three rounds, or outside of the third round?
Oh, man, I really couldn't tell you. My guess is it'll come day two, round two or three, but I barely know who's even going to be a good candidate to get drafted, let alone where they're going to draft that position.
Right, but you think it's a distinct possibility? I mean, let's say, and I won't hold you to this far out unless I can use it in my favor. this far out, put a percentage on one being drafted in the first three rounds.
It's just interesting with the free agency class and some of the names out there that could be interesting. I'll go 70%.
Wow. Okay. I probably wouldn't go that high, but and definitely I think as I sit here right now, I think I'll be surprised if they do it in the first two rounds. So that only leaves the third round at that point. So, you know, I would probably be more around the 40 to 45% mark. But look, I mean, we got a lot to. So much can happen. I mean. We're going to learn so much about Connor and Samuels, we think, during the preseason. And, you know, I don't know how much we're going to learn about them during the regular season. You know, hopefully not much because of the lack of playing time. But that's just my you know, initial thoughts on that. It'd be fun to kind of
real quick. I mean, I don't mean to belabor the point, but do you think that, because they have to replace Bell some way, do you think it's going to come totally internally? Do you think it's going to be free agency? Because it sounds like you're pretty lukewarm on the idea of the draft.
Yeah, I envision some combination of maybe what's there now, maybe a younger friend. Giovanni Bernard, what's going to happen to him next year? And that is a guy that I can't just get out of my head. Is Giovanni Bernard even safe at this point with the Bengals this year? You would assume he is, but isn't he the highest earning running back right now on the Bengals roster? On a roster that has a lot of running backs that could be on their 53, you know, what's the possibility of Bernard still being cut between now and the start of the regular season, and could he be one of those guys that lands in Pittsburgh? You know,
he'd look good in a Steelers uniform.
He would. Assuming Bell's gone, you know, let's assume Bell's not here in 2019. I mean, he'd look good in Steelers uniform backing up Bell and pairing with Connor this year, I think. Mm-hmm. But yep. Moving forward into 2019, we'll probably laugh at even suggesting this, you know, a year from now. But Connor, Bernard, Samuels backfield 2019. I mean, you could probably make that work, right?
Yeah, it's possible. Like you said, it's a critical year for Connor and Samuels, but as also you mentioned, you know, you're going to get a good look at them in the preseason, but eventually that's going to kind of fade. It's not going to matter as much. And are they going to play enough? Are you going to have enough of confidence in your evaluation to be comfortable with making them the guy or the guys in 2019? I think that's kind of dicey. I mean, unless Bell were to get hurt and you get a real good look at one of those guys during regular season action, you know, do you want to put all your eggs in that basket? Maybe, but I'm not convinced.
And look, who knows? I mean, something Bell could miss a game or two, three here and there, and right. And we see some sort of combination of Connor and you know, whoever, Ridley, Samuels, you know, take your pick, you know, whatever way you think this is going to go. And maybe we see enough there to say, oh, maybe they're going to be okay. Look, Connors looked good when running the football so far. But, you know, it's been spots, not enough to draw any hard conclusions from. You know, really, we're still working off of his college tape, to be quite honest with you. And I think we're going to learn a lot about him during the preseason. Same with Samuels. I wrote about that, you know, just recently as well, too. You got to find out how fungible these two guys are and if the fungibility level of Bell can be replaced by the two. But back to the original thing. I just view it being probably more of a combination of what they have now plus maybe a free agent guy instead of spending a first three round. Not saying that they won't take one. You know, I'd probably put the chances of them taking a running back in 2019 after the first three rounds at about, I don't know, 70%, 80%. But in first three rounds, I'm not so convinced right now.
All right. Oh, that's fair. You know, but we'll we got a long ways to go before we figure all that out.
All right. Joshua Dobbs back with some quotes there. Had a few interesting things. You know, he had the hyperbole about James Washington, but no matter how you sliced it, James Washington seemingly impressed teammates and coaches during the offseason football and short session. So just here's my prayer for James Washington. Just stay healthy or stay more healthier than Juju was able to stay during the preseason and training camp last year. If he does that, I think he's going to be in great, great shape entering the regular season. So I'm not going to hit so much on what Dobbs had to say about him or what Mike Tomlin had to say about him. Really, Mike Tomlin just said, look, guy's in great condition and not surprised that he's if he contributes at the same level Juju did during his rookie season. Dobbs talked a little bit about, you know, the playbook and Randy Feitner and you know, the scheme and all like that and how it does and doesn't differ from Todd Haley's. Saying in essence, you know, same plays, these things we think we have known anyway. Same playbook per se, play call, stuff like that. But with Randy, of course, play calling is going to be different. He goes on to say about really, I took this as more because he was asked to talk about the differences in scheme between Haley and Randy Feitner. You know, he went out of his way to say it's a little bit more of a bigger quarterback-centered system where the quarterback has a lot of power at the line of scrimmage. Now, I think we'd be fooling ourselves to think that Ben didn't have a lot of power at the line of scrimmage with Todd Haley, right? I mean,
right.
Especially in today's RPO world, run pass option. I mean, you know, like Fletch said, you know, it's all about, you know, it's all ball bearings nowadays. You know, that went over your head, Alex, but
not a clue what you're talking about.
Come on, guys, it's all ball bearings these days. Google that. But it's like RPOs. Come on, guys, it's all RPOs these days. That's not factually correct, but there is a large percent of RPOs, and we've seen the Steelers run quite a bit of it, even under Haley. How blown away were you about by Dobbs' comments? Probably not a lot, but you know, do you think there's going to be? I guess what I'm getting at is you know, Feitner's plays. New wrinkles in there, new route combinations, maybe a couple of wrinkles in some formations out of all that. But Ben Roethlisberger is going to have a slightly bigger role in what happens outside of the huddle.
Yeah, I mean, I think you'll definitely see some distinct differences, especially once we kind of get under the old 22. We can kind of really kind of look at this thing 100 different ways. Big picture, if you're a casual fan, you probably won't see a lot of changes. You know, with Dobbs' comments about the quarterbacks having more responsibility in a bigger role, I'm not saying he's wrong about that, but I'm guessing he would have said the same under Todd Haley, because as a rookie quarterback going into year two, just naturally you get more responsibility because you're trusted more. So I don't know if it's necessarily more of a byproduct of Fietner changing anything, but just Dobbs' progression that allows him to take on more going into year two and be charged with more responsibility. So maybe that's the real reason kind of beyond any of the coordinator changes.
The league is slowly becoming an RPO league, I mean, across the board, though, right? I mean, it is all ball bearings these days, right?
Yeah, sure. It's not only just in terms of quarterback responsibility, RPO, but just quarterbacks being able to call their own plays, having their kill plays, being able to run the no-huddle offense, so, you know, that where the coordinator is really not involved, where it's all on the quarterback to get guys up the line, get a play in, and execute it. So it's not even necessarily just an RPO standpoint, though that is true. It's just the way the offense is going, how fast the offenses move, that naturally makes the quarterback more important.
How much closer do you think the pro game is going, or how much more the gap between pro and college game, you know, as far as offenses and utilization? I mean, are we how much do you think that gap has closed, let's say, over the last 3 years, and do you expect it to close even more? I mean, are we going to start seeing we're already seeing, I mean, it's not just a starting 22 anymore. It's more like you have a starting, I don't know, 27, right? You know, 28 in today's NFL. How much do you see that gap kind of closing between what happens in college and carrying over into the pros?
Well, it may close a little bit, but college is always ahead of the NFL because it kind of has to be, because you have, you know, smaller school teams or teams that are at recruiting disadvantage or money disadvantage or whatever that have to play catch up with the big schools, and they got to be creative. And so the NFL always lags behind with those ideas. And I think, you know, it will never get totally there, because the way that the quarterbacks are valued in college football and the way quarterbacks are valued in the NFL, they're just never going to overlap. You know, with the way quarterbacks get paid and professionally, you know, they're never going to be used on read options 200 times a year the way a college team might use their quarterback, because that quarterback is so valuable enough that we can't let anything happen if you're the owner saying this guy cannot get hurt. So I think there's always going to be some stuff in the college game that never makes it to the NFL. But I think, you know, even though the NFL is definitely adopting some of that stuff, they're always two steps behind because college is doing something different, you know, because some coach in the MAC needs to try to find an edge, and the NFL is always a little bit late getting there.
About 7 years ago, people would tell you the Steelers Super Bowl window is closing. It's still open. There's a draft. there's a draft every year, it seems like. Super Bowl draft coming through that Super Bowl window with the Steelers, it seems. And I think the way the Steelers do business, you know, as long as the quarterback has something to do with it, I don't care what you do on either side of football, it's still going to be open. Antonio Brown, and I think you wrote something along these lines, or really had the mantra, really this year might be, you still a firm believer that this year might be the Steelers' single best year chance at winning the Super Bowl because of the way the roster's built right now. And you know, maybe Antonio Brown believes with your train of thoughts. He said the Super Bowl window is shrinking.
Yeah, do you mean to pull up the exact quote that he had, or just
rattle them off?
All right, let me.
Here's what he says: Super Bowl, that's it. And I feel like that window of opportunity is getting smaller and smaller every year. We get close, right there, not quite getting over the hump. Now is the time. Absolutely, this moment has to be the moment in regards to the situation we are in with the team and the organization. This time will have to be the time.
And that's pretty much what I've talked about. Again, it's not – don't confuse –
that sounds like it. That sounds like it should be on a graduation card, doesn't it?
Yeah, with Oh, the Places You'll Go, Dr. Seuss book.
That's a great book. That's a great book, though. Yeah, everybody should read that book. And I try to revisit every now and again, because I really do think Oh, the Places You Go is such a great book. I think it's the original power motivation book, if you will.
Yeah, that's the go-to graduation gift for sure. But no, I mean, again, I don't think this is the last chance for the Steelers to win a Super Bowl, but I think it's their last best chance to win a Super Bowl for obvious reasons. And I think they're almost impossible to disagree with. You're going to lose Bell after this year. Ben's going to be another year older. AB is going to be 31 next year. He's not going to go forever as amazing and a surefire Hall of Famer as he is. And the defense is a total kind of unknown. There are huge years for Bud Dupree, Sean Davis, Artie Burns. What if all those three guys flop? Which is possible. We know Dupree has some big question marks. We know that Burns has had issues, and Davis keeps getting moved around every single year, and his growth is stunted. So what if you go into next year needing a corner, a safety, an inside linebacker because you haven't replaced Shazier, an outside linebacker, a running back? The list goes on and on and on. And yes, you'll have some draft picks. Yes, you'll have more cap space, but can you fix all of that and hit on all those picks at once? And if you don't get that right away and you don't get that for 2 or 3 years, now you got AB at 33, you got Ben potentially retiring, potentially in his last year. I mean, I don't want to get too cynical and doom and gloom about it, but that's the reality of the situation. And that's why I say, this is, if there's a time to do it, it's now. Everything has to come together now. You're all in. I think AB has a similar mindset.
I think the window's open until it's not. I mean, I think the Steelers do such a good job instead of rebuilding, retooling, if you will. And, obviously it's going to be the crucial part about when you get to the quarterback bridge.
Yeah. But do you agree that this is their last best chance? Do you think that's a fair assessment?
I put it to you this way. I would fully expect them to be able to compete in 2019 for a Super Bowl as well and not have any lesser of a chance than they do this season.
Okay. I think they can compete as well, but I think I disagree. I think that it's a lesser chance if you're without Bell. Because isn't this team worse without Bell?
Oh, obviously you'd like to have him there, but I think you can get there without him. Yes, I'd much rather have him. Do I think it'll be easier offensively without him? No, because he does provide so much. Right. You're going to have somebody. It might take three to replace one, and even so, will you still get the one? The answer is. And the answer is probably no, especially when it comes to the pass rushing. Can you get the run success rates out of three than one? Maybe a little lower. But can you get some of the other attributes and the surprise? Here comes James Samuels on the field. It's gonna be a pat. That can he get the element of surprise? I guess and will that kind of thing hurt your offense? Look, I'd much rather have him have Bell than not have him. But
right,
You can win without him.
Yeah, no, I think you can without him. And my battery's going to die on my headset, so you can ramble for a second because I got to switch headsets. But I just think the chances decrease. That's my point.
Okay, all right.
Ramble away for me 1 second.
Fair enough on that. What else do we have here? James Harrison made the rounds at, I guess it would be Fox Sports 1. That's where... what do they call that show with Skip Bayless, Unlistenable or I forget what it is. But anyway, James Harrison was a guest on that. I wouldn't say he took a shot at Mike Tomlin. These aren't new words, I don't think, from James Harrison. I think he said something in an interview on one of these shows. What was it? What's a sports ladies reporter show earlier in the offseason? Anyway, regardless, he says Bill Belichick is by far a better head coach than Mike Tomlin. Yeah, I don't think that's breaking news or shocking news that would come out of James Harrison's mouth, correct?
Yeah. Do you have me okay, Dave? His audio is probably not great, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's not great, but it'll work.
Okay. Harrison's right that Belichick is the better coach than Tomlin. Everything else, is debatable, but I can appreciate the honesty. It's certainly not that Tomlin's infallible and doesn't make any mistakes.
and Bill Belichick is not a player's coach. Hello, that's not a surprise. Mike Tomlin, every year, players and ex-players, current and ex and former players, both say that, you know, he's a player's coach. So, look, I don't take any issue, but at the same time, let's not forget that Harrison did his best to get himself forced out of Pittsburgh. I don't hate him for that, either. I mean, it is what it is. He had to make a business decision. The Steelers had to make a business decision with him. They all go running to the media and try to become media as quick as they know that they're NFL. They hate the media when they're players. About 3 years in, they start taking classes how to become media. And then immediately after their football career is over, they try to become media. So, Harrison's following the same path here. I'm going to try to find and write up some quotes about what Harrison had to say about the communication on the defense last year. And that probably won't shock anybody once I get those transcribed either. Mm-hmm. But yeah, a little something to talk about here during the final week before training camp.
Yeah, the most interesting thing I heard with Harrison was that his implication that Tomlin treats the star players differently than everyone else.
Are you surprised?
No, I'm not really surprised. I think Tomlin treats most people, I think he treats everyone fairly, but he'll treat guys differently, if that makes sense.
Is Tomlin too much of a player's coach?
Well, he'd definitely reject that notion. It's hard for me to say, but
he hates being called that too.
Yeah,
you know he
yeah.
does.
I don't think that's true because I don't think he's as much of a player's coach as people perceive him to be. I think he's generally that, but I think that there's more to him than just being a nice guy in the locker room who can relate with his players. I think there's way much more to Tomlin than that.
Do you believe James Harrison saw Tom Brady running for a meeting so he wouldn't be late?
maybe not literally, but in some sense, Belichick is more disciplined, and I believe that, you know, guys fall in line quicker and better in New England than in Pittsburgh. But it's a philosophy thing. You know, there's downsides to that. Players don't always like playing in New England. They think it's too tense and it's too, you know, you can never breathe. And they're, you know, you can debate whether that's good or bad, but, you know, the philosophy's just got a different pros and cons to it.
Do you imagine James Harrison or Antonio Brown or Ben Roethlisberger have run not to be late for a meeting in the last since 2007?
Yeah.
Maybe AB, obviously, because he came in 2010. But right. I bet AB's not running for any meetings. I don't envision Harrison when he was with the team running or Roethlisberger.
Yeah, well, Harrison apparently was asleep in these meetings in Pittsburgh, so I don't know what he's seeing there. But, no, I mean, I agree, yeah. Belichick runs a tighter ship than Pittsburgh. There's no denying that.
Unless you're the quarterback, though, and look, you want to talk about franchise and head coach and loyalty and all like that. Brady is the only guy on that team that's safe. I mean, any season. I don't Belichick will cut and trade your butt. I don't care who you are, Gronk included. You know?
Yeah, we just heard Gronk in the trade rumors this year. We thought for a while that Gronk was about to get dealt. And I bet you one day Brady could be shown the door too.
Well, yeah, there's obvious. I mean, there comes a day where one or two things are going to happen to him. He's either going to retire or he's going to be cut. You know, that happens to every player. But, you know, as far as general loyalty goes, I mean, it's him, and then that's it. Look at Brent. Just look at the players over the years that – here today, I mean, Brandon Cooks. I mean, you probably thought he'd be in New England 3 or 4 years, right? One and done. I mean, yeah. That's not uncommon for a Belichick coached team. He's just not. He doesn't have the relationship. Can both styles of head coaching win? Yes, obviously they can.
Yeah. Now Belichick definitely has that Knoll philosophy and kind of style more so than Tomlin.
Right. Okay, it'd be fun to maybe revisit some of the things Harrison said about defense and all in a future podcast. Eli Rogers, it just not sounding like it's such a slam dunk for him to return to the Steelers. It sounds like he's got a couple of offers on the table right now, stemming from a tweet he put out there on Thursday morning. Sounds like he'll make a decision soon and might not be with the Steelers.
Yeah, it was interesting. I didn't think he would get a lot of action elsewhere. Maybe that's kind of some sort of leverage or a plea to the Steelers, hurry up and sign me. I want to get in the camp right away. My expectation is that if he does sign anywhere, which he will, it'll be back in Pittsburgh. But I guess we'll get our answer in the next couple of days, like he said.
Regardless, are you expecting a two-year deal? Are you expecting a one-year minimum deal if he re-signs with the Steelers?
Nah, it'd definitely be 1 year, right?
1 year minimum.
Minimum, yeah.
They probably had that thing already in his possession and told him to just sign it, fax it back whenever you're ready.
Do you think he comes back to Pittsburgh? Do you think he really could go somewhere else?
I think he could go anywhere. At this point, I'd say 50-50. It's one of those things. I won't be surprised if he re-signs a 1 year deal with the Steelers, and I won't be surprised if he signs a 1 year deal for the minimum with another team. He's got talent to some degree, but is he a guy that you slam dunk into your top three right now? Probably not. No. I think people ain't gonna want to hear this. I think New England would be an interesting landing spot for him.
You said what, New England?
Right. On a 1 year deal.
With Edelman suspension. I would be pretty surprised though if he goes anywhere else other than Pittsburgh. I'll say that.
You know, the talk, at least Ian Rappaport tried to throw it out there. Cordell Patterson being your temporary placement for Edelman, yeah, that ain't happening.
Mm-hmm. I mean, he was brought in for special teams only.
Right. You have to have some level of football smarts and be on the same page with Tom Brady when it comes to doing a lot of things that what Edelman does. That's not Cordell Patterson, Bless his heart that he's able to stay in the league as long as he has. But he's not going to be the one. It is going to be interesting to see how the Patriots do get through once again these games without Edelman, right? I mean,
but they always find a way.
They always find a way. But it's going to be, like I said, it's going to be interesting to see how they do it. Mm-hmm. Any hot other topics we need to get here? I think we've got most of them. You want to preview another position here?
Yeah, let's do the defensive line next time because I'm sure my audio is like a toaster now.
It actually sounds pretty good now. Sounds better than what it did when you first clicked in. So.
Yeah, I had the wrong setting. Do you want to run through the D line or you want to take this next podcast?
No, let's run through the D line. I mean, it's fairly cut and dry with about four of them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And dry, obviously, Cameron Hayward, Stephon Tuitt, Javon Hargrave, and Tyson Alualu. And that's one guy, really, isn't it funny? We haven't talked a lot about him, Tyson Alualu, but he's safe, right? I mean, he's penciled him in regarding, barring injury type of guy, right? And what fantastic! He was what we thought he was in his first year with the Steelers, and maybe a little more than what he thought than what we thought he was.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. He was a guy that was steady, that had to play probably more, definitely more than anticipated after the Tuitt injury, but gave you quality snaps. Well-rounded guy, a good effort player, not a great pass rusher, but decent enough, I guess. He's not going to play a whole lot in sub package, but yeah, he's a total lock. Yes.
All right, so that's the four. Look, we don't need. Do we need to preview? The key with these guys up front is something that we haven't really seen a lot of, terribly a lot of in the last two seasons, at least or full seasons. Both these guys got to stay on the field. The year prior, it was Cameron Hayward missing time with the injuries. Last year, it was Stephon Tuitt with whatever, bicep, back, whatever, missing games. Neither one of those two guys was fully healthy for their respective season. We see what Cameron Hayward can do when he's fully healthy. It'd be nice to see a full season of Stephon Tuitt fully healthy with the experience he has now. If both these guys stay healthy, you know, 75% of the snaps, probably 15 sacks combined between the two, right? And a whole hell of a lot of pressures. Hargrave, you know, when you have a, you know, how the question is, you know, look, he's obviously going to be the guy in base 3-4 in the middle. Be interesting to see how much time he can get outside of base.
Yeah, and it's still going to be tough for him. I'm curious if they do run some more, you know, stay in base more often, if they try some of the 3-3-5 that they dabbled in last year to get Hargrave on the field. That can make some sense with some of the issues they have at inside linebacker and some of the issues they have on the edge. Back to Tuitt, though, you know, I obviously the injuries have been a big issue for why he hasn't taken that jump, but this is such a huge year for him. He's got to break out this year the way that Hayward did last year. Now, maybe that doesn't mean necessarily getting all the way to 12 sacks, but you would like at minimum a career high in sacks this year. His current record 6.5. So you want at least 7-8. If you can stiff double digits, that's fantastic. But he's got to be a guy that finishes the play more often. And him and Hayward have to be the guys, especially on the edge where you're not quite sure what you're getting from a guy like Dupree, where you know Watt's going to drop into coverage a lot. You got to wreak your havoc up front with Hayward and Tuitt because they're getting paid like that.
Absolutely. He's got to be a force this year. He's got to continue to remain. He hasn't been bad against the run.
It's been fun.
I don't think so, his career. Just want to see more consistency on that pass rush and him finish some of these sacks that he probably should have had. I'm okay with only 6 or 7 sacks as long as he's, you know, the pressures are there, you know, and somebody else is getting them or they're turning into interceptions or whatnot. He just got to I think if he stays on the field, that'll solve it.
Yeah, I hope so. He's never played a full 16-game season except for, I guess, his rookie year. But, of course, he's not playing full-time then.
Right. You would like to be able to sit down halfway through the season and say, wow, both these guys have played 75 to 80% of the snaps and just looking good as far as pass rush, overall pass rush. You know, not just sacks, but actually what happens, you know, on those plays, getting the pressures, getting the sacks, getting the hits, forcing things to happen as part of the passing game. You know, if they're on the field 75% together through the first half, I think the Steelers' defense will be in good shape.
Yeah, but I also want them to get sacks as well because you can't, you know, pressure's great, but a sack, you just can't replace that. So, you know, I know you have the over-under at like 15. I hope that number is higher. I hope it's closer to 18, maybe even 20 if you can get, you know, because that's the level of play that they can bring. They can both be double-digit sack guys.
Yeah, I think I'll be surprised if those two combine for 20.
I mean, I think that's a little high, but I would like it to be above 15, somewhere closer to 20.
Yeah, you know, look, I mean, take one less one if it's one of the other ones is impactful in a sack fumble or you know turns into putos or something like that, puts off of turnovers. You've been happy with Hargrave for what he is so far, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think you're looking for maybe a little bit more out of a pass rusher. He's able to win some one-on-one battles with centers. He can have games where he takes over. I think about J.C. Treader week one last year. I think about Travis Swanson against Detroit. Those are games where he dominated. I want to see that a little bit more often. Of course, you're always worried about the run defense first. Keith Butler talked about that. I know Hargrave had the back injury late last year that probably was you know, not talked about enough as it should have been, but I've been happy with his play overall, yes.
All right, LT Walton, he should be there. He should be one of the six, but would we be surprised if he's not?
I would be pretty surprised because I don't know exactly who you're going to replace him as that. Because he's the fifth defensive lineman, and he's the last one active on game day, and that guy, I think, pretty much has to be able to play all three spots and for Pittsburgh, because your backup nose tackle, like McCullers or Frazier or Gilmore, one of them's going to make the roster, but they're not going to be active on game day. So you still need a backup nose tackle for game day. And that's why Walton got nose tackle snaps last year. So I think if you get rid of him, I don't know who you replace him with that's going to be able to play DN and nose tackle and three tech. And that's why I think Walton really brings that value.
What if Joshua Frazier can show that he's a better backup nose tackle? Still, his versatility is going to probably him not being anything more than that. He could be better than Daniel McCullers, which isn't hard this at this point, but not versatile, still not versatile enough to get in sub packet situation, but yet still make the team and be inactive on game days.
Yeah, that's kind of the best case scenario for Frazier, is that he gets on the roster as the sixth defensive lineman, but is not active on game days. Because again, does not have the versatility to play DN like Walton. Like, what is the there is no, to me, compelling case to, and again, we haven't seen these guys take a snap yet, but there is no compelling case to me to dress Frazier over Walton.
Will Frazier make it?
I really have no idea, to be honest. I'm just going to go into camp without any big expectations or any assumptions, and we'll see how McCullers looks. We'll see how Gilmore looks. We'll see how Frazier looks. And again, they could even go out of house if one of those guys step up. So I'd like to see him make it, but I really have no idea.
Something, true or false, something's gone bad if Daniel McCullers makes the 53 this year.
Either that or Carl Dunbar's earning his money. What are your thoughts with McCullers? Is he ever going to show anything more than what he has?
I was surprised they re-signed him, even though it was...
Yeah. Do you think that was a Dunbar-driven thing?
I think it was get people in here that know what's going on, kind of thing. Look, Dan's had his moments. I mean, he could put... You know, there's been times where it's looked like he's pushing a VW in the Superstars competition, you know? The thing is, it's that's all we've had. Yeah. You know, the occasional driving the center back to the other goalpost.
Right. not enough.
Yeah, it's just not enough. I think if he is on the 53, something has gone bad. You know?
Yeah.
Greg Gilmore, you can understand why Greg Gilmore was signed as an undrafted free agent. Yeah, that's a guy that's going to be fun to watch. I think it becomes probably an either or an or between Greg Gilmore and Frazier for number six.
Yeah, and you know, I think Gilmore's a name to keep an eye on. 7.5 sacks last year. He's 6'3", 305, 34-inch arms. You know, I think he can definitely play end. He could play maybe some nose tackle as well. I don't know how much time he's going to see there, but that's kind of a dark horse to make the team as that sixth defensive line spot.
Kendall Vickers, give us some quick recaps on Kendall Vickers. We should already know enough about LeVon Hooks to not have to talk about him. Parker Cawthron, Casey Sales.
Yeah, they're all kind of in the same boat. You know, Hooks was interesting because he did kind of seem to elevate his game and elevate himself on the depth chart late last year, so I don't want to completely forget about LeVon Hooks. But the other guys, it's just tough to find play time for him. You know, Vickers, I think, is going to play... I think he might play nose tackle. I don't know if he's going to be big enough to play end, but he's just kind of a tough guy that's going to stuff the run well, not going to give you anything as a pass rusher. Can he disengage in blocks? Can he improve his hand use? That's going to be big for him. Sales and Cawthron, I mean, you know, I did a depth chart for the defensive line yesterday, and I'm just trying to find out where these guys could fit. I mean, you have 12 defensive linemen. You're only going to have three true teams. The other guys have to kind of fit in when guys have days off or get hurt. Or you know, you always get kind of one or two guys that are only using sub-packages. So like the last two plays of a practice session, they'll come in and just take two quick reps and then they're back out. So that could be the position for Sales and Cawthron. But, you know, again, we'll see what happens.
True or false, the number six again this year?
What's the question?
True or false, the number is six again this year at defensive line, keeping six.
Yeah, they'll keep six, yes.
No more, no less. We both agree on who the first five are. I think Frazier will be the six. You concur?
I really couldn't tell you. I mean, I think a good question is, will the six even be on the roster going into camp? I think it's totally possible that they go outside the organization. But Keshad Lyons, a couple of years ago, you know, they did that move. So could that happen again? I mean, I think they're playing the field as much as they're playing internally.
Yeah, I we wouldn't be shocked, I guess. I would put it at, though, right now as, 85% chance the six will be the from the six under contract right now.
And I hope that it does. Otherwise, something went really wrong with all those guys. But I don't discount it entirely.
All right. What else do we have? Got through the position. You have anything else to add on the defensive line preview here?
No, I'm going to do a training camp depth chart right before camp starts for every position. So, you know, I'm trying to go through my I'd be curious to see who the second string nose tackle is that first day of camp, because Mullen's probably going to play end. He'll get nose tackle reps, but he'll probably start out at defensive end. So will it be McCullers? Will it be Frazier? You know, Hooks maybe? It's a good question I'm asking myself.
All right, let's end with this. I know people are tired about the national anthem stuff and all like that, but a joint statement was put out by the NFL and NFLPA on Thursday, saying the NFL and NFLPA, through recent discussions, have been working on a resolution to the anthem issue. In order to allow this constructive dialogue, which they should have had that right from the get-go, in order to allow this constructive dialogue to continue, we have come to a standstill agreement on the NFLPA's grievance and on the NFL's anthem policy. New rules relating to the anthem will be issued or enforced for next several weeks, with these confidential discussions are ongoing. In short, we're probably not going to have an anthem policy this year, are we?
I have no idea, Dave. It's so chaotic. Here's the only thing I know, and I don't generally wade into the anthem stuff because it's so just messy to deal with, but there is now no good solution for the NFL to have. No matter what they and the union come up with, it will be chided and criticized by some group, you know, left, right, I don't know. But they're now in the spot where they've dug themselves so deep a hole that there's no way they come up with a good solution.
I think this last sentence in the statement says it all. Our shared focus will remain on finding a solution to the anthem issue through mutual good faith commitments outside of litigation.
Is that really what it says?
That's what it says.
Well, because the union had filed a grievance, so I guess that's probably what that's.
Oh, right. Obviously. And yeah. Now, are you going to tell me? Well, here's the thing. I have a feeling that up until 2000 through 2020, their shared focus will be finding a solution to the anthem issue through mutual good faith commitments outside of litigation. I think this is going to, this and the whole, you know, social injustice thing, and obviously guaranteed contracts. I think these are going to be the three main talking points of CBA negotiations. I think I will be surprised if these two sides come to an agreement on the anthem policy prior to this year's CBA running out.
So what do you think? I know you're looking longer term, but what do you think happens this year? I know you said no anthem policy, but what does that mean? Because I think ultimately they'll just roll back to what they had last year, where I guess there really wasn't one, so I guess I sort of agree. But what do you think they end up coming up with this year?
I think teams will have to make, you know, I don't know what's going to happen, you know. I think we're going to be back to what – I don't know what really did happen last year.
Well, last year there really wasn't a policy because it was never an issue before. It was just – I mean, it would never even came up. So, yeah, that's why I said the NFL is in such a mess. I mean, it's July 20th and they're trying to figure this out. And like I said, they are in a no-win situation here.
I mean, are we going to have – do you think we're going to have kneeling and – interlocking arms and fist raised during the 2018 season?
Yep, I do. I think if anything, it's just the players have been energized all the more by the way the NFL has tripped all over themselves trying to deal with this.
Okay, and if they do that, then, comma.
You're asking what the punishment's going to be for that?
No, I'm not saying there's going to be a. I'm saying then what? Is there going to be any punishment? I mean, are we just going to continue? This going to be a weekly story, counting of heads in the media and trying to make an issue out of it?
Yeah, you're probably right. It's probably going to be. I think it's going to be like last year, where there's not going to be any formal punishment. You know, because this all started, for anyone who doesn't know the context, when the Dolphins, because the Dolphins had to submit their like discipline policy because they were reporting to training camp, and per the NFL, you could be suspended up to 4 games for disrespecting the anthem, and that's kind of what started this whole process. I don't think that's going to be the case this year. I really don't know how it's going to go. I think it'll be that whole, you know, who's standing, who's kneeling kind of media scene, and it's just going to get uglier from there, I think.
And the Dolphins policy now goes out the window now, right?
Right, yeah, it's been suspended, yeah. And that's what the NFL is responding to the Dolphins, which was, again, that was not the Dolphins policy. That
right,
was the NFL's
but it's
policy.
Not, it wasn't, you know, it wasn't framed that way, right?
What do you mean?
At least initially yesterday, it was not framed that way. It was framed at the Dolphins all of a sudden became the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just for submitting their policy.
First, yeah, it was the NFL's policy. The Dolphins were carrying the baton, I guess. With I don't even know exactly. This is why I said it's such a messy thing. It's so chaotic. There's no good solution. It's gonna be a wreck.
All right, I put this out there on Twitter, and I suppose I should follow up on it. We got a few questions, I think, right? Do you have – I put that out there last night. Do you have
– I didn't see that you put it out there. I can go look at it real quick.
Let me read up here.
For whatever it's worth, last thing on the anthem thing, I don't think it's going to be an issue in Pittsburgh this year. I think that they're all going to have their – you know, they're all going to stand, and they don't want to deal with what they dealt with last year. So I don't think it's going to be – as big an issue in Pittsburgh as other places.
All right, I put out on Twitter last night they have questions for the Friday Terrible podcast. I want them answered. And I told them to use this hashtag, Alex. Dave, I really think I'm entitled to an answer to that question. Do you, that hashtag flew over your head, didn't it?
Yeah, what's the reference there?
I don't want to give it away. I think a few people got it, okay?
Okay.
If you got that hashtag, email me, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. Let me know. All right, from Adam. Man, I can't tell if these are I's or L's in your last name, Adam. Ilfelder, Adam Ilfelder, at Adam Ill on Twitter. He says, clearly Bill Belichick is a better coach than Tomlin. Not sure why it's creating a stir, but would love your view on where Tomlin rates within the next tier of coaches. I mean, look, he's top five, right, Alex?
Yeah, that's where I have him. I don't really have a great list of coaches because I don't follow other teams as closely as Pittsburgh, and coaches themselves are just tough to evaluate because you really have to follow them closely to get a good feel for them. But yeah, top five is fine. I'm a big fan of Doug Peterson. You know, Pete Carroll's kind of fallen off, but I still like Pete Carroll. I like his philosophy. I like the way he teaches the game, teaches tackling. Yeah, top five I think is a safe answer to give.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't know how I would draw out the rankings
right.
myself, but I you know, Adam, I Alex and I both put him in top five. I think for sure. I like what Peterson's doing over there in Philly. I think I would rank Tomlin higher than Pete Carroll, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I probably would too.
Who else? I mean, who else has been around long enough?
I don't know if it has to be a longevity thing.
Right, that's true. I mean, who else? The kid with the Rams.
Sean McVay's done a great job.
Done a great job already there. So, yeah, top five, Adam, and we'll kind of leave it at that. Kevin Hattrick, at Hattrick Rules on Twitter, writes, if the Steelers lose twice to Patriots, is Tomlin fired? I guess he's assuming that the Steelers will play the Patriots twice again in 2018. Obviously, they play once later in the regular season. He's thinking they'll do it again. I think it would take a lot for Tomlin to get fired after, you know, in 2018, Kevin. I know a lot of people don't like hearing that, but I think that, you know, okay, if he loses to the Patriots twice, no, I don't think he's fired.
No, I don't think so either, because I assume that means losing twice to New England means that you went to the AFC title game, and I don't see Tomlin getting fired after an AFC title game appearance, as disappointing as it would be.
Right. Now, would it be, boy, this man just can't beat the Patriots? Yes. But a lot, not that it makes it all right, but a lot of teams can't beat the Patriots. I mean, the Eagles yeah. did. I mean, there you go, you know, but no, I mean – Even if, for God forbid, they lose twice to the Browns and still made the playoffs and didn't go all the way, I don't think you fire him. I mean, it would be a very disappointing, obviously, as Tomlin likes mm-hmm. to say, but I think it would take a lot for Tomlin to get fired after the 2018 season. I really do.
Yep.
Click on the hashtag here. How does Dirty Red from Steelers and Sawdust, how does Dirty Red compare to James Ferrier athletically?
I think Ferrier was a bit of an underrated athlete. I mean, Medikevich is a pretty limited guy from all that we've seen, so I don't think he's at that level.
Yeah. Dirty Red, I mean, even James Ferrier's later days, he played at like, what, 230 or 228, 232?
Yeah, played light.
He still moved okay, I mean, for what they were running. There were a lot of zone, you know, back then.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Joe DeFazio, with Bell gone after 18, what does that mean for finances, cap, and extensions for Steelers in 2019? Man, it's still a little early. Will they have to give, you know, will Shazier be healed enough that, you know, shown enough that he can get a contract? What's going to happen with Bud Dupree? You know, they're already, will they end up even having to honor that? You know, because even though you picked up his fifth year option, you can cut him, you know, and not have to honor it. Has he lived up to his end of the bargain that you're talking long-term extension next year at this time? That thing could go either way. What's going to happen with Ben and his contract, you know, next offseason? Well, what else? You know, I mean, there's just so many variables right now, Joe. I'll have a better grasp on it once this year's 53 is set, and granted, not a lot's going to change even, you know, between now and then. I just haven't taken a long, hard look at it. I'll tell you this, I'm never worried about the Steelers cap, because the cap massaging that goes on, I'm never really worried about it. I mean, Boswell, I think, is going to have an extension this year, but even so, that's not going to really heavily influence the cap next year. Bell not being there means you're not going to have a heavy cap hit. The Steelers will be their usual moderate conservative selves during free agency, so I'm not expecting a big splash there. So, I'll let you look, Joe. I'll let you know a little bit more closer to the regular season starting. How about that? Any thoughts on that, Alex?
No, that is a Dave question through and through, so I defer to you.
Yeah, I mean, I really haven't given it much thought. I will here in the coming weeks. From Noel West, Artie Burns has to be on a short leash this year. No, Cam Sutton looks capable if so. I think you have to monitor him. I think I wasn't the hugest fan of Artie Burns in the first round when it happened. I think Artie has played a little bit better in coverage than what most people give him credit for. Mostly it's football IQ, I think, with Artie Burns right now. And I think it's the fact that he was more of a bump and run guy at Miami, and he's asked to play a lot of, asked to do some things that he wasn't asked to do a lot in Miami. So I would like to see him do more of the things he was asked to do at Miami. And if his run fields don't get any better, and if he continues to let these flat out blown coverages happen, and that's what happened in Kansas City. That's what happened in kinda in New England, and that's what happened. He bit on a double move against Indianapolis. Outside of those plays, was he awful?
I mean, outside of the bad plays, I guess he was pretty good.
I know that's a hell of a way to phrase it, but
yeah.
But I mean, that's. I mean, we could circle eight plays, five against the pass, maybe three against the run that really went into the books of yikes. But yeah. other than that, how's the old saying? Other than that,
how was the play?
How was the play, Mrs. Lincoln?
Yeah. Yeah, those eight plays can kill you. They can define your season. And
am I right about eight plays, really?
I mean, in terms of the super egregiously.
It's more than that, right.
Yeah, I mean, super egregiously bad, probably 8 to 10. But that's probably on the high end for most corners. No, I mean, I think this year can be a better year for Burns. I hope it is. It's a critical year. But it sounds like they're going to play more man coverage, which will be more in Burns' wheelhouse. Hopefully communication's better. Maybe just playing with Tom Bradley's going to help him. Maybe with Morgan Burnett bringing different type of leadership could help. I think I'm okay with the idea of opening up some competition in camp with him and Sutton in that right corner spot. I believe Burns is going to win it because Burns had a fantastic camp last year. We forget about that. Camp is going to be kind of his element, and then you give him the first month of the season to see where he's at. And then from there, if he's struggling, you possibly do make a change. But I will say this. If Sutton is inserted into the starting lineup, you lose a valuable chess piece for everywhere else. Who's going to be your backup slot? Who's your backup dime? Yada, yada. So not that you wouldn't make that move because of it, but I'm just throwing that out there. That Sutton has a ton of value of just the Swiss Army knife in the secondary as a backup. And obviously, ideally, you want Burns to thrive and stay in that starting role.
And let's be honest, we still got a lot to learn about Cam Sutton.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I mean, a ton to learn. I mean, mm-hmm. we think we know, but we don't know. Hamstring last year during camp and preseason, and he had his moments too. What was it? The New England? What game was it? Titans game? Didn't look great. Talking about Cam Sutton, a couple of plays, right?
Yeah, Bengals game. AJ Green burned him once, and the throw was off, and that saved him.
Maybe that was it. I'm thinking of. So in other words, you agree with Noel? Maybe on a shorter leash this year. Probably not as short a leash as Noel wants to have him on, but Artie better be good in the first four games. Better.
Good way to put it. Yep.
And we'll learn more about Cam as we get into the offseason or into preseason training camp and all. From Greg Hughes, the final one, wrapping things up here. What percent chance do you put on Josh Frazier finally ending Daniel McCullough's uneventful time on the roster? Greg, I don't know if it's going to be Josh Frazier. I don't know if it's going to be Greg Gilmore. I don't know if it's going to be a guy not on the roster right now. But I would put a high – if you want Josh Frazier specifically percentage being the guy, I don't know. I'd go about 70%, I would guess. I would go 98.96745.2% that somebody ends it.
So you're saying there's a chance. That's Daniel McCullers right now. To answer the question again, I'll clearly, as I've proven, probably the worst person to ask about who will take that sixth defensive line spot. Because like I said, I'm just going in clean slate. But I mean, I'll say like a 33% chance because I don't have a great feel for how it's going to go.
Heck, we're 1:30 in here. I'm going to ask you one quick question and we'll close this thing out. As far as training camp approaching this year goes, I know that you try to go in with an open mind. I know that you try to go in without any preconceived biases or whatnot. If I was to make you say what is one possible bias or preconceived notion that you're going to have about a player or players ahead of this year's camp, who is it?
I mean, I have a lot of biases. It's just about trying to fight them and trying to be as objective as possible. That's a good question. I'd have to chew on it. I think it would be because I assumed that John Bostic was going to be the guy. And am I going to view that differently because I still think Bostic's going to be the guy? Am I going to, you know, slight Medakevich, or am I going to boost Bostic internally, subconsciously, because I thought Bostic was going to be the almost slam dunk starter, and that's probably proving to not be the case. So I think that whole inside linebacker spot of giving Medakevich a fair shake and treating him as, you know, not just the, oh, he's had a great college career, but he's too slow and can't do this and can't do that, and focusing on what he can do and what he does do well more so than the struggles, and the same with Bostic. So maybe that's the inside linebacker spot. It's a good question, though. I really haven't thought about it.
And I think you gave, I think that's kind of the answer I kind of expected from you, too. And I think yeah, you're right on the money, too. I think it is going to be hard. We're really going to have to treat, you know, sometimes you wish that you didn't know who was wearing the uniform, even though right, easy to pick out, you know, just from body and all like that is, you know, it's going to be, I find myself with it too. God bless his heart. You know, I want him on this team. Yep. I do, but man, I just having a hard time seeing him being the guy. I especially with Bostic, and granted Bostic doesn't have his track record ain't worth putting a stamp on, right, you know, yeah, and mailing it. But I think he might be the single one guy that'll be hard to remove any preconceived notions or biases ahead of camp here. So,
but he does deserve that fair shake, because, well, I mean, we don't know much about him. He hasn't gotten that kind of role yet.
He really does. And the more I've thought about this, even though I'm a little bit surprised, it's his job to lose, I think.
You think you go that far and say that? Wow.
Yeah, and I don't think Bostic has learned enough yet to be able to take it. Do I think he's going to? Yes.
Think he will take it? What do you
think? I think Bostic will take Matakavich's spot. I think he'll be the guy.
For week one. Okay.
Should we be concerned that it happened? Are they just trying to, are they concerned about Tyler's feelings right yet? You can't help but go back to last year and think how different would have things been if Matakevich doesn't suffer that shoulder injury? Does it change the, you know, would that have been his chance, and then now we've been moved on because we would have gotten past it by then, or would it have made a damn bit of difference, you know? And I don't see how things would have went different at the inside linebacker position had he been the one to step in for Shazier.
Yeah, I think he would have played better than Sean Spence. I don't think it changes the outcome of Steelers
that
season.
How can he not play better?
I'm making an easy statement there. Yeah.
Right. I mean, how can he not play better than Sean Spence? You know, would he have made a difference against maybe some of the run in the Jacksonville? You know?
Yeah, he could have. But again, I'm getting my own bias into it, though, by saying, well, he couldn't have done the pass. I don't know. Maybe he could have. Right. So I'm going to try to correct that.
All right. I've rattled long enough, but that should give something people plenty to chew on this weekend, something to listen to here. I need to get to work, and, oh, yeah, I got to go to the doctor once again today. Hopefully this is my last doctor's appointment for quite a while, though. But, folks, okay, Alex, thanks for sitting in for David M. Todd once again. Follow David on Twitter, at David M. Todd. Follow Alex on Twitter, at Alex_Kozora. Follow the show, at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you like what we do and want to donate to the cause, go to SteelersDepot.com. Hit that donate button up right in the navigational bar. And until Tuesday, as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.